Quick, what's the theme for Joshua 1? Be strong and courageous. Because
God is with us.
God is with us as you go into the promised land. Great. Okay. Joshua 2, what do we see happen there? We had two spies were sent to spy out the land and Jericho. And who did they meet at Jericho?
Rahab.
And did they make an oath with her?
Yes.
To do what?
Save her.
And her family. Because she
believed
and she helped the spies, protected them from being turned over to the authorities and escapage. Okay, Joshua 3. What was the main highlights of Joshua 3?
They crossed the Jordan.
On dry ground.
The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of the whole earth went ahead of them into the river before they crossed.
And stayed there until everybody else had crossed over. Okay. And then Joshua 4, what did we see? We saw some things being built. What did we see?
Two memorials.
And the stones were taken from
the Jordan.
Right where the Ark of the Covenant was.
And one memorial was built where?
In the river.
In the river.
Where they were standing.
One in the river and the other at Gilgal. Okay, and then Joshua 5. We were at Gilgal, and a couple things happened while we're there.
Circumcision and Passover.
And then
Joshua meets the commander of the Lord's army.
Yeah.
And the people eat of the land, and immediately the manna stops.
So lots going on, chapter 5. Before we get into chapter 6, I'd kind of like to explore this commander of the Lord's army a little bit before we head into 6. Joshua, the glance, page 159, we have chapter 15. No, excuse me, verse 15, chapter 5, we have the instance where he's introducing himself as the commander of the Lord of the army, of the Lord's army. And anybody go back and do any extra, like, if he's the commander of army, how many soldiers does he have or anything like that? Anybody? Matthew, or who the commander is, Matthew 26, verse 53, we see Jesus talking to Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane. Peter had drawn his sword, and verse 53 says, this is Jesus speaking, "Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" So, 12 legions of angels. A Roman legion normally has 5,000 soldiers in a legion. So if he has 12 legions, he has 60,000 fighting angels at his command. Pretty cool to think that here we are before they go into their first battle. God is right there with his army of angels, taking control and ready to work, ready to show up. We see him giving strategic information in chapter 6. So I just thought it was interesting and important for us to see who this commander was and how many angelic soldiers he had at his beck and call. And to see him interacting with the Israelites as we do in chapter 6. So, Anything else on the commander of the Lord's army? Anything interesting? Okay. So, chapter 6. Let's read. Go ahead.
I will say that at the end of chapter or verse 15, it says Joshua is instructed to take off his sandals because the ground is holy. And that is an indication, just like in the burning bush, God is there. Mm-hmm. Like that's why it's holy, because God is there. Not just because this agent says it's holy. That God is literally in their midst. Mm-hmm. And I just mm-hmm. And we know they're getting ready to go into battle. So
right. So they're not going really cool. in by themselves. They're not going in on their own accord. And they've got angelic help. So okay, so let's start off. Do we have a theme for Joshua 6?
Joshua fought the Battle of Jericho.
Sing it, Amy.
I had that song in my head this week too. And the wolf came tumbling down. That was my summary of the verse.
Uh-huh. I had by faith, not force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's nice. That's good.
I think I got that from Matthew Henry. Anything mm-hmm. I pulled right in. Mm-hmm.
Well, and truly, it was God fought the Battle of Jericho.
Mm-hmm. And Rahab is rescued alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I put Joshua obeys God. God destroys Jericho and saves Rahab. So, okay. So let's start. Let's read verses 1 and 2, and I'll read verse 1. And we'll go to you next. Okay. All right. Now Jericho was shut up inside and outside because of the people of Israel. None went out and none came in.
And the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and mighty men of valor."
Okay, let's just stop and look at those two verses. What's going on in verse 1?
Jericho is shut up. They were so confident they just shut all their doors. They weren't worried about the Israelites. They thought they were perfectly safe
inside their walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is it that they were terrified?
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it said their hearts melted, mm-hmm. you know, previously. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was because it's just like, okay, we got to bring it all in.
Well, I mean, mm-hmm. I think it could be yeah. both and, because oh, they're terrified. Yeah. But in their ignorant confidence, they're like, "Oh well, if we just shut up our city, then they can't hurt us."
That's what's worked for us before, so we'll just do the same, and it's not a big deal. But they had never seen the Jordan divided, and these thousands of people walking through.
I'm not going to argue on that point.
Just a second. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could they see the Jordan from Jericho because it's not?
Well, the way. At least that I understand it, and I'm sure Julie will go into this more next week, but the reason they had to do Jericho and then Ai is they wanted to get up to the top of the hills or mountains so they could, you know, see the whole land. So Jericho had to be defeated first, so it was obviously higher than Jordan.
Yeah.
So they wanted, I would guess, could see the Jordan. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I kind of guess it's not very far.
Well, and what
it
I read...
like 2 million people you would notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What I read, too, is that cities in these times were built on levels of rubble. So, like, as buildings crumbled or whatever, they just kept building the city. So, even Jericho, which may have been lower in elevation than Ai, or however you say it, would be up. And so, yeah, you would think they could see them coming.
Well, I think they also were thinking that the Jordan being flooded like it was going to be a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, here they are.
Mm-hmm. I read that Jericho was considered impenetrable, so they felt like they were safe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I think it's both and.
So to
yeah.
kind of mm-hmm. deal with the elevation thing, some excavations have revealed that they featured the bottom part of the city, or the fortress is actually, They had a stone wall 11 feet high, 14 feet wide, and then up from that was another sloping wall of 35 feet that went at an angle. And then above that were it joined massive stone walls that went around. So it was...
That's big.
So based on that, yes, they could see the Jordan. Once you get on top, you've got two 30 feet high walls that ran parallel to each other around the city. And then in between those walls were houses and, you know, stuff. And then
well,
there were...
Well, they did say people lived in the walls, so, mm-hmm. you know.
Right. Yeah, like Rahab.
Rahab, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So her house when they...
And it was kind of a caste
like, what happened to Rahab's
system.
House?
So the lower class lived in the lower parts, the more vulnerable parts. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you got to get through all these
to get to the
layers of people. To get to the leaders.
I did. You just mentioned what happened to Rahab's house.
Mm-hmm. I did. The walls came tumbling down.
I did read that there's a section of that outer wall that did not come down, and they think that that's possibly where Rahab's house was.
Well, I wondered that because, well, we'll get into that later.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that too. I was
like, yeah.
Anyway. They took her out of there.
But after the walls
crumbled. After the walls crumbled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's where I was, that's where I was like,
mm-hmm. I have an AI.
How could she still be there?
That's okay.
From most parts of the city of Jericho, the Jordan River is not directly visible due to the low-lying terrain and dense foliage along its banks. However, it is possible to get a view of the Jordan Valley and the mountains of Jordan from the from elevated points in or near Jericho. The river itself is about 6 miles east of the modern city.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
AI.
Yeah.
Whether it's right or not.
Somebody that
is. Yeah. Well, that's just it. You get so many different people commenting on, you don't know what's accurate or whatever, but it kind of gives you an idea. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it helps you division it a little bit better, I think. Anyway, so that's just verse one. So let's look at the second verse here. It says, the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand, and the king and mighty men of valor.
I love the verb tense here.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying. Have given. Like you
have given. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's mm-hmm. not, I'm going to give it to you. It's, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've delivered it over.
Yep. So, okay, verses 3 through 5. Let's continue there.
You shall march around the city, all the men of war, going around the city once. Thus shall you do for 6 days.
7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. On the 7th day, mm-hmm. you will march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets.
And when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up, every one straight before him.
And Joshua the son...
Okay, we're going to stop right there, 5. So let's look at 3. Who's talking here?
God.
We still have the commander of the Lord's army speaking with Joshua and giving him his strategic battle plans for the operation. So verse 3, it says, all the men of war go around the city. And they'll do this for how many days?
Six days.
You think that's a normal military strategy?
Not typically.
No. So, anybody know what is the normal military strategy to take a walled city?
Battering rams, catapults.
Digging through the wall.
Yeah. They build ramps.
Climbing over.
Starvation. Just uh-huh. kind of hang out there. And
climbing through the plumbing system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of preparation. Lots of physical.
Or just going around and camping out for months until the people inside starve.
Starvation. Yeah.
So those are different strategies. So is God planning that kind of strategy?
Mm-hmm.
No, something totally different.
He's doing a show of force.
Yeah, well, a show of mighty power.
Yes.
Of God, yeah. Okay, so marching instructions. Let's look at verse 4. What do we see? What do we see repeated in verse 4?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. What do we know about the number 7 in the Bible?
It represents perfection or completion.
Mm-hmm. Anybody count how many times 7 is used in this chapter?
You told me.
Seven.
14.
14. Oh.
She told me. I didn't count.
So, one of the commentaries I read or used for this, he said, and I don't know where he got his information, Jericho was not a large city. It was more of a fortress. So it was possibly about 7 acres, which if you do the math, which I can't do that, but he had some, his brother was a mathematician and he did the math for him and said that it would be about a half mile walk around the city. So I added a few more sevens to our sevens. We have 7 priests, 7 trumpets, the 7th day of marching around 7 times. And then if you walk around a half mile for 6 days, you get 3 miles. Mm-hmm. And then if you do it 7 more times, you get almost 7 miles. So I have 7 sevens.
Oh, wow.
In this. Now that's my sevens. I don't know if that's God's sevens, but as I'm looking at this, we've got 7 priests, 7 trumpets, 7 days, 7 times around on the 7th day, 7 acres, 7 miles of walking. 7 sevens in.
Wow.
Anyway. Don't know if that's accurate, but it's kind of cool to me. I think the number 7 is obviously important in these verses. So, and then verse 5.
It shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall shall fall flat.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it doesn't say it just fell.
Flat. So this showed that the people, God's plan required people to participate in this. Anybody look up the word flat?
I didn't really turn around when I saw it.
Under part or beneath. So it fell flat enough that it possibly made a rampage for them to go into the city without having to dig their way around. You know, it said straight before them. So apparently it fell flat enough that they could walk in.
It said that the number of troops that surrounded could, you know, totally surround the city. And so then after it fell, they could all just go up into the city. You know,
kind of like a swarm, right. Which is kind of, yeah.
Which would kind of go with, or would relate to everyone straight before him. So if they are fully encompassed, they just go.
Right.
And back in verse 3, it says, all men of war. Numbers 26 says the number was
635.50.
Yeah, something like that. So it's a lot of men.
Especially in a small city like this, just 7 acres.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people,
right?
In a really small area.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on those verses?
If you can see, just something I read that the army was going ahead of the ark. Just to be sure everything was clear. I mean, there wasn't any booby traps or anything like that, but everything would be smooth, so the carrying of the ark would be a smooth transition around it. And then it also pointed out what an honor it was for those seven priests, to be those priests. I wonder how they chose them.
Maybe they had a rotation. Somebody got to do it one day, and the next day, seven other ones got to do it, and then...
So,
just share the joy.
Well, one of the things I was noticing is that in verse 5, it says, all the people will shout with a great shout.
I know.
The seventh day, was it all the people that...
I wondered that, too.
It's either all the people or all the fighting men who were...
Yeah.
Because I read somewhere, too, that maybe not everybody participated in the march around the city.
Right.
So that...
Because it was a short distance, we don't need 603,000 men to...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
To do it each day.
I don't know, God doesn't tell us all those fun details that...
That we want to know.
That we want to know.
Yeah. 2 to 3 million?
Right, exactly. But then, you know, because it did say the children out there,
I don't think
so.
No,
it would just be men.
I think they were still camped.
They were still back at
Gilgal.
And it was all the men of war.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then when you verse 5, it says all the people. So
right,
is it all those people, or is it all the people?
Yeah. Well, maybe the people in the camp shouted too.
Maybe so.
You know, I don't know
how many miles away they were.
Who knows? Okay, so let's move on. Let's do 6 and 7. Where did we leave off?
And Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said unto them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord.
And he said to the people, go forward, march around the city, and let the armed men pass on before the Ark of the Lord.
Okay, so we've got, who is Joshua speaking to now?
Priests.
Priests and the people, and he's passing on the orders that the commander had given to him. So he was communicating this unusual plan. And they were to carry the Ark of the Covenant into battle with them. But was it really a battle?
I don't know. In some respects, I say it's a battle of nerves because it strikes me that this is yet again an opportunity to choose courage and trust in the Lord or to go, this is really a dumb battle plan. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's really a battle of their spirit. It's not against Jericho. It's, are we going to obey God? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to use our human logic?
It's interesting when you think about a wall and military, usually the people, like let's say of Jericho, would have been at the top of the wall, the military people with whatever kind of
weapons
they might have. But then we go back to verse 1. It says Jericho was shut up inside and outside. So, you know, maybe their fighting men were not at the top of the...
Because they didn't feel like they needed to.
Right? Yeah, right.
Because they were locked down, so nobody can come and get us. We've got this giant wall.
But, I mean, if you were the warriors walking around, you'd be wondering.
You'd be fearful of something being dropped or projectile or something.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do 8 through 14.
And just as Joshua had commanded the people, the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord went forward, blowing the trumpets, with the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord following them.
The armed men were walking before the priests who were blowing the trumpets, and the rear guard was walking after the Ark, while the trumpets blew continually.
But Joshua commanded the people, you shall not shout or make your voice heard, neither shall any word go out of your mouth until the day I tell you to shout. Then you shall shout.
So he caused the Ark of the Lord to circle the city, going about it once, and they came into the camp and spent the night in the camp.
Okay, let's just stop right there. So, back in verse 8, we see Joshua commanding. And then verse 9, well, 8 and 9, we kind of see the lineup formation of their parade of troops around this fortress. And what do we see? Who's at the head? Who's leading the...
The armed men.
And then we see...
Priests blowing trumpets.
Okay, and then followed by the ark. And then who's bringing up the rear?
The rear guard.
Okay. We don't know how many, obviously, we talked about. But so we had a question in our homework on page 27, question number 2. Why do you think God instructed the Israelites to carry the ark around the city of Jericho? And what was its position in the march? And why would it be placed there? It's talking about the ark. Any thoughts?
Well, it was the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
One.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the middle, it was protected.
Mm-hmm.
Priests were on either side of it.
They wanted it to be seen by all. It was in a spot where everybody could see it.
What about the trumpets?
Warnings?
That's what I'm wondering. Heralding the Lord.
I thought it was to
ark.
Announce the glory of God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, trumpets are used for lots of things. They're a call to the people, like, you know, that's to gather the people.
Mm-hmm.
They're a warning. They're, you know, worship. I mean, there's lots of reasons for trumpets used in the scriptures.
Being battle attack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we see trumpets later on being used in battles.
Well, what kind of trumpets were these? It says every time.
Rams.
Followed by ram's horn.
So, a specific. God wanted a specific sound.
And I read that ram's horns were bass very low, very dull. They weren't sprightly like some trumpets are today that you hear at band.
Mm-hmm.
And, Well, anyway, and my memory's not there to bring it back. But anyway, specific, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Would those be like the shofar?
See, that's
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I wondered if the ark was in the middle because that's a symbol that God is with us and that He is willing to be in the battle with us. He's not to the side, he's not to the front leading.
He's not on a hill watching.
He's right there with us. That was
kind of the thought. Anything else from 8 and 9?
One other, I keep with all these little things I read. But one thing, priests were never part of a battle ever. So this was really unusual that they, of course it's not a battle, but they would take such an important process in this procedure to conquer Jericho, because they usually aren't anywhere near.
The ark normally isn't either.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
They're not even numbered in the fighting men.
Right.
603,000,
they're not fighting,
yeah.
Well, there's... Because it wasn't a human battle, it was going to be God's battle.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dana?
Yes?
Can we back up and see what people have to say on number 1 on page 27?
Oh, question number 1 on page 27?
Any significance to what transpires at Gilgal and what occurs at Jericho?
Okay, so what did we see going on at Gilgal?
Is it circumcision?
Mm-hmm. And getting right with God. And then to celebrate the Passover, you needed to get right with God in order to celebrate the Passover.
renewing of the covenant.
The renewing of the covenant.
So that they could qualify to celebrate Passover.
And then, well, Jericho was the judgment, right? Of God, right?
Yeah.
And
on the Canaanites.
On
the Canaanites. Not on the Israelites. Yeah.
Right, but Jericho was mainly, in the city was the Canaanites, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wanted.
The other thing that transpired at Gilgal is the manna stopped. Mm-hmm. They were able to eat.
From the land.
Food from the land flowing with milk and honey.
And what does that have to do with Jericho?
Well, oh, in Jericho or Gilgal?
Well, I'm looking specifically at this because my mind went to a place and I want to see the answer key. Because
I think it's more about the circumcision,
the obedience,
and obedience and Passover,
and being in right relationship. Because think about when they left Egypt, they could have gone straight to the promised land, but they were disobedient, so God didn't allow them to go straight. He let them wander. He led them, but they still had to wander. So to me, if they had not gotten right with God, this was like chance number two. He got them through the Jordan River, and then they were obedient, and so he's with them again. And his plan for them to occupy Israel, or the Promised Land, is continuing forward instead of them having to wander again. Does that make sense?
But then he becomes forefront in their minds because they've gone through the circumcision.
Right.
And so that kind of puts their thinking on God instead of the task before them, what they have to do as fighting men. It kind of focuses their look to God and his power and what he can do instead of what the people can do.
Well, it was truly covenantal because they did their part. Then the commander of the Lord came, and they got to go and defeat Jericho.
Right, right.
I think we have to remember too that the people that are here now did not experience what their parents had experienced in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
There could have been a few that were children, you know, that remember something about the plagues and all that stuff, but it had been 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
They had not been circumcised in the wilderness. They had not celebrated Passover since the first year out.
Right.
They celebrated Passover in Egypt, then 1 year later they celebrated again.
Right.
They had not celebrated Passover since then. So this, you know, going through the obedience of circumcision and waiting and having all the men vulnerable for a few days, you know.
Mm-hmm. That was certainly not a good military.
Right. And then celebrating Passover because they go through to remember what God had done for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a time that in Gilgal they were able to, like, get their hearts right. You know, God had led them in the wilderness for 40 years because the parents had not been obedient.
Mm-hmm.
They had grumbled and complained and argued and rebelled. And so this second generation is the group that are going in to take the land, and they needed to be, they needed to remember what God had done for them.
Mm-hmm.
So just going through the whole process of crossing the Jordan in a miraculous way,
right,
all the men circumcised, and then celebrating Passover was a big lesson in are you going to trust me or not? You know, and a time for them to rededicate themselves or reconsecrate themselves to God.
Did we answer it at all?
Well, my mind went in a different direction. And I didn't pick circumcision, the Lord did, so I'm just going to go ahead and say, to me, they're circling around, the walls fall down, they're removing the old, because it's always hard for us as modern people to accept that it's okay to just go ahead and blast away. I mean, the text even says, women, children, everybody, blast them away. It's always hard for us, but to me, it's symbolic of a circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
circle around, cut it off, blast away the, or, you know, remove the old to make way for the new.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I mean, I don't know.
I like it.
It goes in a, you know, I don't think it's offensive to a Jewish sensibility to talk about the specifics of circumcision.
No.
But
yeah.
Anyway, that's what I
did think about that a little bit when they said the name of Gilgal means rolling or circle.
The hill of
like
force.
And God, what did it say? God rolled away the memory of Egypt.
Yes.
Rolled away their reproach. Okay.
That's very thoughtful.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I was trying to figure out what are they asking in that question.
I know.
I don't know. That's why I want to see the answer.
That's the beauty of all of us sharing, because we get different opinions and stuff that, you know, we go, oh wow, I never thought of that, and you know, it's just makes it more interesting. I think.
I wonder what a Jewish person would say.
Okay, let's look at verse 10. Let's see, we went through 11, right? Okay, so let's look at verse 10. Here we see Joshua commanding the people. There's a but there. So what's going on?
What is
quiet.
Silence.
We're talking about comparison of the noise of
the trumpets
being blown continually.
And
I just looked up about the shofar, and this is from a Jewish website. It says a shofar, a ram's horn that is blown like a trumpet during Rosh Hashanah services every day except Shabbat during the preceding month of Elul, blah, blah, blah. The four sounds of the shofar, he names those, remind the people of a crying voice. Oh. Hearing the shofar's call is a reminder for us to look inward and repent for the sins of the past year. Mm-hmm. Which I never thought about sounding like that.
Okay, so we have the ram's horns that are going to be blown continually. Then we have the complete opposite from the people. They're not supposed to utter a word. So very quiet until they're given the order to shout.
Then they shall shout.
Then they shall shout.
And you can imagine with all these people, there has to kind of be a low murmur rumble all the time, because people are always talking, and for it to be silent would have been
spooky. So, can you just...
That's why they had the men there.
Although I've met a lot of men there, more Gabby than women.
Yeah.
So then you could just hear all those thousands of people and their feet. You know, the marching sound,
and then the trumpets. To cover that up.
It would be a little ominous, I would think.
Yeah.
But it also might make the people in Jericho go,
whoa,
wow, that's happening. Or, that's well, that's a weird battle plan.
Well, I was going to ask that once they're doing it all this time. What do you think the people in Jericho thought of all of this?
Man, they breathe heavy.
Okay, and then verse 11, what do we see?
The ark circled the city, went about it once.
They did as they were instructed.
Went back to camp and spent the night. Mm-hmm. Easy peasy, right?
No, because they had to.
Okay, so verses 12 through 14, let's continue with 12.
Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark of the Lord.
And the seven priests, bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns, before the Ark of the Lord walked on, and they blew the trumpets continually, and the armed men were walking before them, and the rear guard was walking after the Ark of the Lord, while the trumpets blew continually.
And the second day they marched around the city once, and returned into the camp. So they did for 6 days.
Okay. So we've got the quiet, the loud trumpets,
and doing this. This is the second day. So then at the end of 14, we see they did this six more days. So we've got 6 days, 7 days. No, six days. I'm getting my numbers confused. Okay.
And this time he tells us that it's early in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sound carries better in the morning, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they had to go around 7 times. They wanted to get an early start before it got hot.
No, this was still on just day one.
Day through, or, I mean, two through one six. Circle. Day 2 through 6. So,
but yeah.
So we've got my question I asked before. We got the people on the wall or behind the wall hearing these trumpets, wondering what the goodness is going on. They were probably laughing at him, wouldn't you think? Would they taunt them any?
Maybe.
I don't know.
According to the lady tells, they did.
I know, I can't get that out of my mind.
I know, the grape slushies and the peas up on top of
the wall. Oh. You said veggie tails? Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to put myself in their position.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, we knew their hearts had melted.
Right.
So they were afraid.
Right.
But then, you know, after a few days, they're just marching around and nothing's happening.
Mm-hmm. They get kind of cocky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They might have been, I don't know.
So look at them. Nothing's happening. Why are they doing this? Yeah.
On the flip side of that, they were also very superstitious. So there's a part of me that wonders if they weren't still a little scared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they stayed inside. Because, yeah. I mean,
if they would have felt comfortable, they'd have probably gone in and out.
Yeah.
But they still, I mean, I still think when they saw the Jordan Park, mm-hmm. that flood stage, that memory didn't go away, right? Mm-hmm. Right?
No.
And even if they didn't see the river part, all of a sudden we have 2 million people that are mm-hmm. on our side of the river.
Yeah.
Right.
How did that happen?
Right. Well, and
without
don't
divine intervention.
And don't forget that Rahab had already reported that for at least 38 years, mm-hmm. the people of that area had melted hearts, and no spirit left in them.
Yeah. And so God had done.
Mm-hmm.
At these other
right.
Not what they had done, but what their God had done.
But from a human perspective, though, I mean, that you would think some of them at least would have been going, well, so where's the mm-hmm. where's the big power now? Mm-hmm. They're just mm-hmm. marching and blowing their trumpets.
Yeah. Where's the threat of that?
Right.
There's a parade every day. We're just
so
let's go up to the wall and watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, I'm sure that's what started happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's look at the Israelites' perspective as they're marching around the bottom of the walls, looking up at these huge fortifications. What do you think they were thinking? Just
we're relying on God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally faith.
Because he totally just let them cross. I mean, you know, that would be fresh in their mind mm-hmm. of what he can do.
But that's why I can't get past thinking it was a daily battle with their own spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because God didn't force them to be courageous. He doesn't force them to be obedient. It was a daily battle when they got up to whether they were going to be obedient or not.
Yeah.
And then seeing these walls,
just like we do,
walls would probably make them feel a little helpless. Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah,
what can we do to these walls? Mm-hmm. They're impregnable.
We need to walk far enough away that the walls are not going to fall on us when it falls.
True.
Mm-hmm.
But the presence of God was with them in the heart.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he had, to some extent, God had graciously given them kind of the full picture.
Yes.
Because he said, after you do this, the walls are going to fall.
Yeah.
Because,
and then you're going to go in straight away. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to verse 15. Let's see, 15 through 21. We'll take a bigger chunk.
Is that me? On the seventh day, they arose early at the dawn of the day and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city 7 times.
And at the seventh time, when the priests had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city."
and the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent.
And in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest you make yourselves a curse.
18?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
18.
Okay.
Make yourselves accursed when you take of the accursed thing, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it.
But all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go in to the treasury of the Lord.
So the people shouted, and the trumpets were blown. As soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city.
Then they devoted all in the city to destruction, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys, with the edge of the sword.
Okay. So, in verse 15, do we see anything new in verse 15?
Well, they got up early. Mm-hmm.
They got up early.
They did seven times
around.
I did read. It was 7 days. One of those days had to be the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Jews say that the final day was on the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I kind of heard that.
So,
kind of so contrary to their normal belief of not doing anything on the Sabbath.
It seems to me, though, the Sabbath would be on the first day because they were just walking. They weren't, you know.
Because their steps were usually numbered for the Sabbath day, the length of the number of steps they could take.
But they would have been exceeding that just to get there from Gilgal, because it was, what did we decide, like 6 miles or something?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because they were told to march 7 days, and so one of those days had to have been a Sabbath day, which commentary I was reading said, when God created the earth and all that was in it, he worked over 6 days and rested on the seventh. At Jericho, we see God commanding his people to do their most strenuous work on the seventh, as he completed his work of judgment. So we kind of have a switcheroo. Just interesting. Okay, verse 16. What do we see that they're able to do?
Shout.
Yep. Anybody look at the word shout?
I did.
Okay.
Raise a sound, cry out, war cry or an alarm of battle. Sound a signal of war or march. A shout of triumph, a shout of applause, or a shout for joy.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably all of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they were shouting out of a shout of faith, and the time had come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they had faith. They were all shouting, so they had faith that this would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They were obeying like God, finally. And they've been very patient, walking around for 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had to be a thrilling time.
Mm-hmm.
That it was actually, everyone was shouting, making noise. There was all this noise and just waiting for something to happen.
For God to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they knew.
That had to have been amazing.
I wonder how soon after the shouting before the wall fell.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before the wall falls, we get some instructions here. Verse 17, what do we see going on?
Everything's to be devoted to destruction except for Rahab and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And then the precious metals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sherry read accursed things instead of devoted to the Lord destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So different translations use different So the accursed things, this was a ban. Obviously, a ban was issued to the Israelites. Stay away from these things. You know, they're bad. Don't, you know. Mm-hmm. And so they had things like their idols associated with demonic worship, depraved worship, and all those bad things that the Canaanites wanting, they needed them to abstain from those things. But if we look down in verse 19, what do we see?
Silver and gold.
Silver and gold.
So why are they pocketing those things and not the others? Any thoughts?
They won't melt because they're holy to the Lord.
Yeah. They go to the treasury.
And Janice said?
They won't melt.
They won't melt in the fire. Mm-hmm. So
we're going to torch the whole place in a few verses.
Uh-huh. So they set everything on fire. Those items won't burn. And then could it be tempting for someone to walk by and go, oh,
absolutely,
I could pocket that and no one would know. Little foreshadowing.
I was going to say.
Sorry, I couldn't.
Spoiler alert.
Anyway, so that's why they had to be removed and put into the treasury of the Lord so that no one else could use them.
I wondered if there were any idols that had been made that were made out of like gold, silver, bronze, etc. So then when they tried to save that, well, it says don't save the idols, but yep, they're out of some sort of metal. Then what did they do with them? Put them in the treasury?
It says all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron. So I think they took all of it.
So if there would have been something that was like,
Okay, verse 20. The people finally get to shout. And I'm sure just that alone would be enough to want to enjoy shouting. Finally. So first time we hear their voices heard over 7 days after circling Jericho. I can imagine the people up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing that, we're completely surprised.
Yeah, because the first 6 days they just walked around doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were silent. I mean, except for the voice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. So the walls fell flat, and every man could go straight before him, and the city was captured. And then what do we see happening in verse 21?
But we've all been the seed to destruction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oxen, sheep, donkeys, everything.
With the edge of the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't wait for the fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They, anything living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's read 22 through 25.
But to the two men who had spied on out the land, Joshua said, go into the prostitute's house and bring out from there the woman and all who belong to her, as you swore to her.
So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her. And they brought out all her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel.
They burned the city with fire and everything in it. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord.
But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Okay. So, why was Rahab rescued?
Because they promised her
the covenant.
They
made a covenant with her.
Mm-hmm. She was a.
They swore to her,
and she was a believer.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Rahab, and I know this isn't part of the. We all know it because we've been studying her and what was going on. What kind of things did she do to demonstrate her faith?
She gathered her family and put them inside.
Mm-hmm.
She told the
spies that mm-hmm. she believed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And she kept them safe. She lied to the officials mm-hmm. Who were searching for them.
She put herself at risk.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And she gave them a plan of escape. She helped them mm-hmm. escape. Mm-hmm.
What else did she do?
She hung the scarlet cord
yes.
outside her window as soon as they left.
Yep. So she followed their instruction.
Mm-hmm. She had to tell her family and explain for them to believe too. Because mm-hmm. what good would it have been if she had been saved and then
right.
she mm-hmm. then told her family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how long they were cloistered.
Right.
She might have gathered them immediately.
Uh-huh.
Or we don't know.
Or maybe, they lived together always. I mean, who knows?
And she turned her back on the way of life that uh-huh. she's always known.
Uh-huh.
And she chose God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that verse 25 says that she, basically that she was saved alive because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. And there's just so much more to it than that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, of course, in 25, and she lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we know she was in the line.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Lineage of Christ. Yeah.
Which he didn't know when he wrote the book.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And somewhere it said that she and her family had to be purified.
Yeah.
So they had to live outside.
Yeah, that's at verse 23.
I don't know how long that would take.
Is it 7 days?
Yeah, I don't know.
They probably had to verify that she really
did
believe in God.
And when would the clock start? Like, I could imagine them needing to get this battle and
uh-huh.
everything. I don't know.
Yeah, it would be in Leviticus, probably.
Right.
But God did tell them what to do with foreigners that wanted to join.
Right.
Right.
But
there was a way. Circumcised.
Yes. Yeah.
So in these verses 22 through 25, we see judgment versus salvation.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that everyone else in Jericho had heard all the same things that Rahab had heard, and she and her family were the only ones that repented and believed, and everyone else just perished.
But it was because their sin had come to fullness. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the big things that, and we're going to see this in chapter 7 too, it's kind of like, whoa, how could God really do this to all these people? I mean, in our day,
mm-hmm.
you know, but yet it says clear back even in Genesis that they would be taking the land little by little, and it had to be, their sin had to come to the fullest extent.
Yeah, because there was some time that he was saying that because the Amorites are not yet.
Right.
The iniquity of the Amorites.
Yeah, that they weren't quite ready to be killed.
Well, it hadn't come to the extent of the sin.
Right.
That was total, and you know, in our day and age, even with discipline of children, people get kind of, you know, spazzy about it. Oh no, we shouldn't really discipline them, you know, and all this stuff. But God does, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it says that He disciplines those whom He loves,
mm-hmm.
and so. It's and we'll see how he disciplines the Israelites too.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's
a little mind-boggling in our
current
culture to think about that.
Yeah. Well, and in this case, the discipline, God's judgment on Jericho was really for the Israelites' good also.
Absolutely.
Because one of his commands was to not assimilate. And if he removes all the people, if they're obedient and all the people are removed, then the Israelites don't have to be tempted.
True.
And there was the 6-day delay too, wasn't there, with the shofar which was a call to repentance. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say that anybody, I don't know if somebody would have repented
if you even know what it was.
Red flag, you know, yeah. If they would even know. But there was, I wonder if that 6 days with the bugling of the shofar was an opportunity for them to repent.
Sure.
Okay, let's finish up. Let's look at verse 26. Is it?
Me, I think.
Okay.
Joshua laid an oath on them at that time, saying, "Cursed before the Lord be the man who rises up and rebuilds this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation, and at the cost of his youngest son shall he set up its gates."
Okay, let's just stop right there. Anybody know what this means? Anybody find any verses in the Bible to
I didn't write them down, but I know that there is a man who
First Kings.
Yeah.
I forgot the man's name, but I wrote down the verse, like I was gonna read it more, but I First Kings 16:34 is what I had, but
that's
right.
Yes.
Don't know.
So, but that man's oldest and youngest sons died.
It happened exactly what Joshua said would happen. Interesting to know that Jericho was rebuilt 3 times, resettled 3 times before this curse was enacted. So we see Joshua 18:21, Judges 3, and then 2 Samuel. As we talk, we see that it's been resettled, but it doesn't until 1 Kings, until the curse has actually come to fruition.
So these other places it was built.
Well, they must not have done anything with the gates and the...
the walls or the...
Yeah, because the 1 Kings verse says, "In King Ahab's time, Hail of Bethel rebuilt Jericho. He laid its foundations at the cost of his firstborn son Abram, and he set up its gates at the cost of his youngest son Segub, in accordance with the word of the Lord spoken by Joshua, son of Nun." So, anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, I have a question.
Okay.
Jericho, is that in the area? Where is Jericho?
Today's
world.
I think it's in the West
world,
West Bank.
Where is
I think it's in the West
north
Bank.
And east of
Jerusalem.
Yeah. Okay, so Hamas and Gaza, that's over west. It's on the west side. Yeah, when I went to Israel, we couldn't get into Jericho because the Palestinians had taken over that.
But if you look at your map on 161, you can see Gaza, mm-hmm. and you can see Jericho, separately.
Jericho.
Okay, verse 27. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land. What do we see there?
Promises of God.
Yep. And his fame, how was his fame? Was it kind of like, oh my gosh, the judgment of God is coming our way? Who knows? I don't know. Wouldn't that be a fearful fame? Everybody else's.
If you're not an Israelite.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If you're an Israelite,
it'd be
comforting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also, look at Rahab. Rahab had a chance, you know. Mm-hmm. God's not without mercy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very good. So the Israelites and Joshua kind of demonstrated these things in this battle or this event. Mm-hmm. They demonstrated faith in believing in the plan that God had given them. They had obedience by following God's battle plan. They had courage to follow that plan despite the danger.
They showed endurance because they followed that plan over a period of time, even though nothing happened as it went. And then they showed trust in God, not in their own human ingenuity. So how can we apply that to our lives today? Something to think about and to pray about as we go about our week. So anything else? Any closing thoughts? Okay. Well, let's close in prayer. Thank you, ladies, for showing up today. Appreciate it. Dear Heavenly Father, we are ever grateful to be able to read about your power and your might and how you care for your people and how you give them instructions, and that we see that when the instructions are followed, you're glorified. And we pray that we are able to do that as each individual one of us as we go out today and this week, as we interact with friends and loved ones and neighbors, strangers. We pray that we are able to show our trust and our courage and our obedience to follow you and your instructions on a daily basis. We ask for guidance and direction in that and in our studies of next week's lesson 7, chapter 7. And we just praise and thank you for the glories that you have done for us and this church. But we pray in your precious name. Amen.